This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Of course, first day of Shiva Saba Tammuz, the 17th day of Tammuz, which begins the so-called period of 3 weeks of mourning ahead of the day, which is the ninth day of Av, which commemorates the day on which both of the temples were destroyed and numerous other disasters befallen the Jewish people. This day, the 17th day of Tammuz, is considered to be the day on which the walls of the old city were broken down in the period of the Second Temple, just before the destruction of the Second Temple. And of course, this is the first time that we're going through this 3 week period ahead of their fast.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering if we need the 3 weeks this year.
Well, I was just going to say that it has a slightly different significance to it, having been through what we've been through over the last 9-10 months, almost a year now. Interestingly, that this is 40 days after Shavuot, and that is the period where it's considered that Moses was on the mount, was on the mountain on Mount Sinai to receive the tablets of the law. And actually on this day, the 17th day of Tammuz, was the day that he came down to find the golden calf and apparently broke the tablets. So that's also another thing that happened on this day that that we commemorate amongst other things. And I'm sure that it's given people some food for thought. And I was just turning my thoughts to some of the things that have been going on when I watched a video which showed Noah Argamani's father, who has traveled to the United States along with Prime Minister Netanyahu to his trip to visit the Congress. He will speak to the Congress, and of course, he will meet with various officials, including President Biden and perhaps even Vice President Kamala Harris. And we understand he's also seeking a meeting with Donald Trump. But on that plane, traveling with the Prime Minister, was Noah Argamani's father, who, of course, we know lost his wife Leora recently to cancer. And it showed on the plane, as you would think, as you would see on any LL plane, a group of men get together to pray and say Kaddish in memory of people who they've lost. And it's not only Noah's father who was saying Kaddish for his wife, but in fact, two other men who are bereaved parents of people who have been killed over the last few months, and saying Kaddish for their loved ones on the flight for the Prime Minister, which I thought was a particularly poignant moment on that flight. Another unrelated story, but one which listeners might be interested to hear about, is the fact that there has been a polio outbreak in Gaza due to the problem with sanitation and sewage infrastructure having been damaged. And the IDF is now scrambling to vaccinate combat soldiers and support staff who are serving in Gaza right now. And they've emphasized a few things about these vaccinations. First of all, that Israel has plenty of vaccinations to offer to all of our security teams who are operating in Gaza right now. They estimate that something like 95% of the soldiers serving in Gaza were actually vaccinated for polio during their childhood vaccination programs, and so should already have some sort of an immunity against polio, but they've offered them a further vaccination just to be sure, to improve their resistance. There has been no observed outbreak of polio amongst any of the staff, any of the security, any of the IDF soldiers in Gaza, nor amongst the population in Gaza, even though polio traces have been found in the water source, in the water and some of the sewage that's lying around in Gaza. But also the IDF has facilitated vaccinations for Gazan residents. So those who need to be vaccinated in Gaza, citizens of Gaza, there is apparently a program that will allow them to be vaccinated as well. And the IDF, the Israeli government, has also initiated the repair of sewage infrastructure that has been damaged in Gaza, along with some of the power lines and other infrastructure as well, in order to help try somehow to put some control around the potential for an outbreak of polio, you know, in the Gaza area.
Quite scary, if considering what is going on there. Let's just talk about the what is going on. The IDF has launched a further operation in Khan Yunis. So what's the objective of this latest operation?
Well, let's not forget that there was a massive operation in Khan Yunis, which ended approximately 4 months ago. And it took about a month. So the IDF had actually withdrawn from Khan Yunis about 3 months ago. And they decided yesterday, in fact, it began even the day before, to re-enter the area of Khan Yunis, put out massive warnings to civilians to vacate the area, to leave the area, because it's going to become a war zone. And once again, lots of information backwards and forwards with Hamas, trying to prevent that information getting to the general population. And then when Hamas understood that the IDF notices and messages were getting to the civilian population in the Khan Yunis area, the Hamas then tried somehow to encourage people not to move away from there, and tried to encourage people, even try to force people to stop moving away from what's being called the humanitarian area in the area of Khan Yunis. And according to an official statement by the IDF, they've said that due to significant terrorist activity and rocket fire towards Israel, which has been initiated from the eastern part of the humanitarian area, which is in the Khan Yunis area, the IDF has decided to re-enter that area. So it's not only that the rocket fire is coming from locations where the IDF has already operated and already done some cleaning out, but it's being initiated from within the so-called humanitarian zone, which is where civilians are being located in order to try to somehow bring some sort of life, you know, quality of life conditions to people who have been evacuated from their homes. These are the areas that Hamas is using to fire rockets towards Israel. And of course, I don't have to repeat the fact that UNRWA facilities and the UNRWA schools are the main areas where Hamas rocket equipment and ammunition has been found and where they operate from, but also from right within the humanitarian area, which is where refugees have been relocated in temporary living facilities in order to somehow try to allow them to conduct daily activities. And these are the areas that Hamas has decided to use in order to conduct its ongoing military action against Israel. So unfortunately, with little choice available to it, the IDF has decided that they have to go back in there. And so once again, there's been a movement of some hundreds of thousands of people away from the Khan Yunis area. They have heeded the request by the IDF to move away from there. And of course, in the process of asking the civilians to move away from there, the IDF loses the surprise element that they would like to retain in order to attack militants and terrorists who happen to have chosen to operate from within the civilian areas in Khan Yunis.
And of course, that's never how it's reported. It's always reported as Israel just bombarding civilian areas.
Absolutely.
It's never mentioned. It's fascinating.
Interestingly, just one other little addition to that story is the fact that the IDF particularly advised the medical system in Khan Yunis that the hospitals do not need to be evacuated. So the IDF has decided that they're going to be able to operate around the hospitals, where the hospital facilities and the medical facilities do not need to be evacuated on this occasion.
Amazing that. And they obviously had enough intel to know that Hamas wasn't embedded in those particular hospitals. Really just remarkable. And of course, leading on from that story is the fact that the International Court of Justice have ruled against Israel over the areas of the West Bank. Does this have any significance?
Well, I think it does have significance, but the impact, the relevance is somewhat limited, because this is just an advisory ruling rather than having any legal teeth to it. It doesn't really have any consequences. But I think it might be interesting just to look at some of the background to this ruling, which came on Friday. And the first bit of background that I'd like to look at revolves around the president of the International Court of Justice himself, Judge Nawaf Salam. He took over recently as the president of the International Court of Justice. He's been serving on the court since 2018 is when he began serving as a judge on the court, and he is now the president, being the longest serving judge. But before he was a judge at the International Court of Justice, Nawaf Salam was the representative to the United Nations representing Lebanon. And he served in that capacity for 11 years as the Lebanese ambassador to the United Nations in New York. And during the time of 11 years that he served as the ambassador to the United Nations, he voted to condemn Israel 210 times in that period.
Right, right.
Okay. So this is now the man who theoretically has an independent position, in inverted commas, as the president of the International Court of Justice. He's the one who reads out the rulings, the judgments at the end. And of course, I have little doubt that he also has significant influence that are made. And when one has a look at his history as an ambassador to the United Nations, he supported a resolution accusing Israel of systematic violation of the human rights of the Palestinian people and causing death and injury to Palestinian civilians, including children, women, and nonviolent peaceful demonstrators. That was in 2017. And in 2011, he accused Israel of illegitimate actions. In 2014, he accused Israel of crimes against humanity and war crimes. In 2014, he opposed the candidacy of Israel to the vice presidency of the General Assembly's Fourth Committee on the grounds that it is the most condemned country at the General Assembly. Well, guess what?
Yeah, he condemned over and over. Just phenomenal.
And in 2016, he accused Israel of apartheid. So here is the man who is now sitting as the president of the International Court of Justice and ruling that Israel's presence in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem is unlawful. And it was interesting to see the reaction of President Buzi Herzog, who himself, for those who don't know, is a lawyer and has practiced in a legal firm in Tel Aviv for many, many years, practicing in his father's, the firm that his father set up by the name of Herzog Boxner Eman. And he, of course, has a very, very strong legal understanding and strong legal background. And he said, in response to the decision by the International Court of Justice, that he rejected the one-sided ruling and said it was ill-judged advisory opinion of the International Court of Justice, and then went on to say that this ruling mixes politics and law. And I think that that's really the crux of the matter, that if one wants to have a look at it from a purely legal perspective, then one has to consider Israel's side of this particular discussion, which doesn't seem to have been considered anywhere in the deliberations and certainly wasn't reflected in the judgment that was delivered on Friday, where the judges decided that Israel's presence in the West Bank constituted almost an annexation. They likened it to an annexation, but then went on to talk about East Jerusalem, which officially was annexed, as being presence being unlawful there. So it seems very, very confusing whether they want this to be considered as annexed territory or not, and whether the annexation is considered to be legal under international law, because annexation is actually a legal principle under international law, and yet it was very much criticized. So I think that President Bozhe Herzog's comment about mixing politics and law is just kind of the thin end of the wedge. I mean, that's just really the most obvious statement that one could make, but it needs to be made because that's exactly what this is. So fortunately, it's an advisory opinion. Nobody really is forced to do anything about it. There is no obligation on Israel to take it seriously and to react to this opinion that was issued. But it is just another little annoying stain on the record, which we could well do without, and which is really just unbalanced in every possible way. And it just gives more fuel to those haters who say, well, the International Court of Justice, which is theoretically this independent body, has decided. How can we be the ones to argue against them? It's a very, very tough one to have to contend with,
and very, very frustrating, because the when you see the injustice and there's very little that can be done about it, it is just one of the enormous. It's just enormously. It's upsetting in the strongest terms. It is 8:01. That was the Israel Report with Anthony Reich. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
Hi, it's Barry Cohen from the Blue Agency. Israel is currently facing one of its biggest challenges ever. All of Klal Yisrael is praying for the safety of our soldiers and the return of the hostages. We hope and pray that our soldiers and security forces will prevail, and that they will all return home speedily and triumphant. We hold the hands of our clients and friends who have children serving in Tzahal, who are protecting Israel and Jews around the world. May Hashem protect us all.